sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
I want to thank all of you who came out to see the film, The Anatomy of a Great Deception, on September 11th. It was the biggest turnout for a movie that we've ever had, which tells me that a growing number of people have questions about what really happened on 9/11. Joining me today on the show to talk more about 9/11 and its aftermath is Stephen Lendman. Stephen Lendman is a writer, syndicated columnist, activist, news TV personality, and radio show host. He currently writes for MoneyNewsNow.com and VeteransToday.com and hosts, since 2007, a progressive radio show at the Progressive Radio NewsHour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stephen Lendman was born in 1934 in Boston, Mass., raised in a modest middle-income family, attended public schools, received a Harvard BA in 1956 and a Wharton MBA in 1960. After 6 years as a marketing research analyst, Lendman became part of a new small family business in 1967, remaining there until retiring in 1999. Since then, he has devoted his time to progressive causes, extensive reading, and since summer 2005, writing on vital world and national topics, including war and peace, American imperialism, corporate dominance, political persecutions, and a range of other social, economic, and political issues. He's also author of the celebrated books Banker Occupation, Waging Financial War on Humanity, and How Wall Street Fleeces America, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class War, and just recently a new book called Flashpoint in Ukraine, which is a compilation of 22 geopolitical analysts countering the fraudulent Western narrative on Ukraine and why it matters so much. Stephen Lendman, welcome to the show.
Cheryl, it's good to be on with you.
Yes, now you recently wrote an article called 9/11, The Mother of All Big Lies, and you began the article by stating that lies are an American tradition. Could you explain what that means and give us some examples?
Well, indeed, lies are an American tradition. America does not have exclusivity over what I like to call big lies with a capital B and a capital L. And I refer to them as big lies because we're talking about, in most cases, either major geopolitical issues or major domestic ones that affect the great majority of people in America. So if America decides to pass an act like the Patriot Act that affects everybody, well, of course, it does not affect the elites of America. It doesn't affect the corporate CEOs or the military commanders, or the top officials in government, but it affects everybody else. You could call them the 99%. So these lies have incredible effects on people in America, on domestic issues, or around the world on the major geopolitical issues. As far as America goes, I mean, the big lies literally date from the Republic's inception. Big notable ones I mentioned in my article began in the mid-19th century, when America annexed half of Mexico, America became Cuba's colonial power, and many other small independent nations came under America's control after that. The Philippines, Guam, Hawaii, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, goes on and on and on. Woodrow Wilson pawned the U.S. Republic into having America into World War I. He campaigned promising to keep America out of the war. My dad was in World War I in France. Thankfully, he came home. But he campaigned as a peace president, just like Obama. He promised no war. And immediately after being reelected in 1916, he formed the Creel Commission that literally turned Americans, pacifist Americans, into raging German haters. It goes on and on and on. Even World War II was very tainted. American intelligence tracked the Japanese fleet across the Pacific. But the commander, Commander Kimball in Hawaii, in Pearl Harbor, was not warned because Roosevelt wanted the war. The only way he could turn a pacifist public and a pacifist Congress around was to create a mass casualty event, Well, he certainly got it. 9/11 was a mass casualty event. The Gulf Conflict was a famous big lie. Again, it goes on and on. The major things that happen in America, or that America does around the world, or domestically, literally, are based on big lies.
Yeah, and why do you say 9/11 is the mother of all big lies?
Because of everything that happened after it. Look what happened after it. We literally waged war on humanity. George Bush, followed by Barack Obama. Afghanistan. There was a debate following 9/11. Did America attack Afghanistan or Iraq first? Afghanistan was chosen just weeks after the 9/11 event. And a very important thing to point out is this. Wars are not waged on the spur of the moment. It takes long planning before a war can be initiated. The Afghan war was planned months before 9/11. It was only a matter of when the trigger would be pulled and the attack would be launched. Well, 9/11, September 11, 2001, about 4 weeks later, the Patriot Act was passed, and 5 weeks later, after 9/11, America attacked Afghanistan. Why Afghanistan? Because it's a strategic asset, strategically important country. It's a country that has strategic importance in relation with Russia. It's sort of like a land-based aircraft carrier where America can base its troops, and America plans permanent occupation of Afghanistan. Most of the troops may be withdrawn, but Obama wants 10 or 20,000 remaining, and they will remain, and they will remain as a hostile force, mainly targeting Russia. Afghanistan is also rich in natural resources, which most people don't realize. It doesn't have a lot of oil, but it has a lot of strategic resources. Estimates range that they could be worth as much as $1 trillion. Well, America wants its corporations to get their dirty hands on them. So these are some of the reasons that Afghanistan was chosen.
Of course, then they have the drug.
Oh, indeed. Afghanistan is the world's leading producer of opium, which is the product that goes into heroin. So the CIA makes billions of dollars at trafficking heroin. Another story most people don't know. The Wall Street banks make billions and billions of dollars from drug money. I remember somebody telling a story, a person who used to work on Wall Street, who said, every Friday afternoon, the limousines drive up to the big New York banks, Citibank, J.P. Morgan Chase, or Morgan Stanley Brokerage House, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, with suitcases. People get out of the limousines with suitcases. What have they got in the suitcases? Money, drug money, to be deposited every single Friday. This is big business. Mm-hmm. Afghanistan is extremely important. These are the reasons Afghanistan was chosen.
And when it comes to 9/11 or any other of the lies, does it matter which political party is in office, since both parties seem to go along with the cover-up of any of these lies?
It seems to me the Democrats are more warrior-like than Republicans. My God, you could go back in U.S. history, Lincoln the Civil War, Roosevelt World War II, Wilson World War I, Lyndon Johnson Vietnam. It goes on and on and on. Of course, the Republicans are no slouches by any means. My goodness, I mean, they wage one war after another, and they certainly do it now. And George Bush was the president on September 11th, 2001. And immediately war began. He launched war with others planned. Iraq was the second one in mind. It came in March 2003, the second Iraq war. The first one began in January 2001. Bush Sr. launched that war. So the Republicans are no slouches when it comes to waging war. But you could basically say there's no difference between the parties. And I've said it and I've written many times. On the major issues, there's not a dime's difference between them. And the major issues are simple: war and peace, corporate empowerment, a police state apparatus ruling America, example, the Patriot Act and many others, Homeland Security Act. So basically, both parties are in lockstep. They differ on other issues. They're not unimportant, but they don't rise to the level of the biggest ones.
And can you tell me some aspects of 9/11 that made you question or doubt it? Why do you say it's a lie?
Well, I put in my article, Cheryl, the expert on 9/11, David Ray Griffin. David is an extraordinary man. He's written 10 books on 9/11. He is the expert on the topic. And I quoted from one of his articles. Let me just read what he said. He listed 21 reasons why the official story is a lie. There are a lot more than 21 reasons. But let me just read you the ones that he listed. The FBI admitted it had no hard evidence connecting 9/11 to bin Laden. And by the way, Obama did not kill Osama. Bin Laden died in December 2001 of natural causes. He was a very ill man. kidney problems, other problems, and even Fox News at the time reported it. The BBC reported it. The New York Times reported it belatedly, and I remember quoting them. Around July of 2002, they reported that bin Laden died at the end of 2001. So the story was reported, and then it was buried and forgotten. And Obama claiming he killed Osama was another big lie. I don't know who he killed, but it certainly wasn't bin Laden. Second point by Griffin. So-called devout Muslim alleged hijackers drank heavily, frequented strip clubs, and paid for sex. Third point. Technology in 2001 made cell phone calls made from above 30,000 feet impossible. Claims were made that the wife of Ted Olson, I remember, called Ed Olson on her cell phone. Well, she did not, because cell phone at the altitude she was flying at could not get through to her husband, so that was another lie.
And that was verified by the FBI in the Mousawi trial, correct?
I believe so.
That didn't last more than 0 seconds.
Indeed. Another point. The FBI lied claiming Mohammed Atta left behind luggage containing decisive evidence about al-Qaeda being responsible for the 9/11 attacks. False. There was no evidence left behind indicating that, because al-Qaeda and bin Laden and so-called crazed Arabs had nothing to do with the 9/11 attack. Another point. Passports allegedly found at United 93's crash site were false. Another point. Alleged hijackers were not aboard the fourth fateful flights. By the way, I want to mention that the black boxes were finally found, and for years they were buried and not allowed to be made public. But there is a code that pilots or co-pilots in the cockpit can activate to alert a problem, such as a hijacking. It's called 7500. None of the four pilots, none of the four co-pilots activated the 7500 code, meaning there was no problem. There was no reason for them to activate it. So that's another big lie. Another point. Standard operating intercept procedures were not followed. They're very clear, including launching aircraft to go after a suspected. If an aircraft has been hijacked, you would launch aircraft after it, not necessarily to shoot it down, but to stay right with it, to monitor it, and to follow and see exactly what's going on. There were no intercept procedures followed. Another point. Then Treasury Secretary Norman Mineta and Dick Cheney apparently confirmed a stand-down order prior to an alleged plane striking the Pentagon. Well, a plane did not strike the Pentagon. A missile struck the Pentagon. There were no bodies. There was no fuselage. There were no engines. There was no plane wreckage. A missile struck the Pentagon. And I remember in an earlier article I wrote years ago, an experienced commercial airline pilot saying it was virtually impossible for an airliner to get through all the obstructions that would have to be navigated to be able to strike the Pentagon. And even if it was possible to do that, the Pentagon has such defenses, they would shoot the plane down, surface-to-air missiles. I don't think any building in the world is more heavily guarded than the Pentagon. Kind of stuff that goes on in that building. The Pentagon would have shot it down before it ever got close to the building. Well, of course, no missiles were launched to shoot it down because there was no threat. And of course, if it was a missile, which it was, the scheme was to let the missile hit the Pentagon, to be part of the mass casualty event, to let all the things that happened post 9/11 follow. Another point. The 9/11 Whitewash Commission deleted Mineta's comment from its official report. Another point. Secret Service agents let Bush remain at the Sarasota, Florida school for 30 minutes after they learned the second tower was struck. It's supposed to be automatic that if there's any chance of danger to the president, you get him out of harm's way. Well, I would say knocking down two towers was certainly a potential danger that should have gotten Bush out of harm's way, but he stayed for 30 minutes.
Also endangering the students.
Endangering everybody, yeah. Indeed. He was reading a story to the students, and the Secret Service violated what they were supposed to do. They did not get him out of harm's way. Another point. Jet fuel does not heat high enough to melt or cause rigid steel columns to crumble. Mm-hmm. It simply can't do it. How did the buildings come down? They were rigged on the inside with explosives. explosives were detonated and the buildings came down. That's the only way it could have happened. The only question is, what kind of explosives were used? There are some people who think nuclear explosives were used. I don't know, and I don't think conclusive information has come out either way, but the building definitely was rigged with explosives. Just like the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City in the mid-1990s, blamed on two individuals, whether they had any involvement or not, I don't know. But the truck that supposedly blew up the Murrow Building, the FBI building, literally did not do it. The building was rigged. There were many, many buildings in a vast area surrounding the Murrow Building that went down with the FBI building. And in this case, a study was done by an Air Force general at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and the results came out maybe a couple of months after the incident. And an Air Force general exposed the big lie and said a truck bomb did not bring down the building, but there was no such investigation after the 9/11 event. You had the 9/11 commission, but they were paid to lie, not expose the truth. So again, you had a big lie in the 1990s. You had a big lie following 9/11. The official story is entirely different. In Building 7, another big lie, the BBC, Jane Stanley, reported Building 7 coming down 30 minutes before it happened. I don't know whether the video is still circulating, but I saw Jane Stanley reporting Building 7 coming down 30 minutes before it happened with an image of Building 7 in the background.
Still standing, right.
How the BBC could have done this, I don't know, but they did. Yeah. So another one of the big lies. Jane Stanley, I'm certain, will never live this down. There are so many other big lies. There is an initiative called Consensus 9/11. There are many, many remarkable people involved in it, including a woman who comes on my program, Elizabeth Woodworth. She's connected with David Ray Griffin. And they put together, using forensic evidence, key points that are virtually irrefutable because of the forensic work they do to detail the truth, to expose the official lies. I believe they've come up with 44 consensus points, and these consensus points literally take a specific 9/11 big lie and debunk it. The latest ones were the fact that the 7500 code wasn't activated, the fact that our black boxes on the planes were found where they were buried before, and apparently information came out that they weren't found, but they were found. And if they were found, then why wasn't information on them made public? Information on them would go a further step to proving that the official story was a big lie. It goes on and on, Cheryl.
Yeah, right.
One big lie after another.
Now, in your article, you say that the American dream is more myth than reality, and quote George Carlin, who once said, quote, "You have to be asleep to believe it." Are most Americans still asleep, in your opinion? And if so, why do you think that is?
I think more and more Americans are waking up. Too many Americans are still asleep. But one of the things that encourages me greatly is the fact that cable news services, and I believe the broadcasters, are losing audiences. People are getting fed up with what I call managed news misinformation. They want the real thing. They want to know the truth. They want accuracy on the big issues of the day, major world and national ones, and they're sick and tired of being lied to, so they're tuning out. I guess they still watch other things. They watch movies. They watch the sitcoms. They watch these programs, but they're getting fed up with the daily fare, where it doesn't matter whether you turn on CNN or CBS or Fox. You're getting big lies one after another, and they repeat them. The New York Times, same thing. One big lie after another. If you want to know the truth, you've got to go to the alternative media. You've got to go where people will tell you what's going on and explain the things that people need to know. So it's wonderful if people will tune these broadcasters and cable channels out. It's the one industry in America that ordinary people can shut down by their activism. You can't shut down the defense contractors. You can't shut down the automobile makers. You can't shut down the chemical companies, but you can shut down the cable companies, and you can shut down the New York Times. Stop buying their publications. Stop reading them. Stop tuning in to news broadcasts on Fox, on CNN, on NBC. Don't watch. If enough people don't watch, there'll be no advertisers. If there are no advertisers, there'll be no programs, there'll be no news. And the only place people can go for the real thing is the alternative media, like this program, like my own program called the Progressive Radio News Hour, where they'll get the truth and all of the truth.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that is people power in action, and it's something we can all do very simply. Yeah, I appreciate that. Now, certainly the wars and occupations in Iraq and Afghanistan are directly resulting from 9/11. What about the destruction of Libya and the war in Syria? How is that related to 9/11, or is it?
Oh, they're all related to 9/11, Cheryl. Same thing, same pretext for going to war. Afghanistan, the attack on 9/11, which the Taliban had nothing to do with. The second war on Iraq, Bush's Iraq War II. Weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist. You couldn't pull off these big lies if you didn't have a reason to do it, and the reason is America's war on terror, protecting the American people from what I call non-existent threats. The only threats that America faces, Cheryl, are the ones it invents. There was no threat from Afghanistan, no threat from Iraq, there was no threat from Libya. Gaddafi, there were many fabrications about Gaddafi feeding his troops by Agra so that his forces could go out and rape women or slaughter the forces and do things like that. Again, one big lie after another. It was shocking what America did to Libya. Libya was an extraordinary country. The vast majority of Libyans supported Gaddafi. And why? Because he gave them the kind of country people like to live in. Libya was the most developed country in North Africa. You could say the same thing about Iraq. Both countries, extraordinarily developed countries, doing wonderful things for their people, providing them things in Libya and Iraq, free education, free health care, free other social services, getting things that Americans can't even imagine. Americans can't imagine getting these things for nothing. But Libyans got them under Gaddafi. Iraqis got them under Saddam. They're all gone because America wanted the countries destroyed, exploited, letting U.S. corporations in to run things. So waging a war on terror, fabricating big lies about how the country was run, and the harm it was claimed these countries were doing to other nations in the region, to American forces in the region, became the pretext for going to war against them. It was true in Libya. It's true in Syria. I rightfully call Syria, Obama's war. Syria is Obama's war. He planned it. He waged it. It's got nothing to do with Assad waging war on his people. Nothing whatsoever. It's got everything to do with eliminating an independent leader. America tolerates none. It wants subservient pro-Western leaders it controls. Assad is independent. Obama wanted him removed. Same reason we wanted Saddam removed. Same reason we wanted the Taliban removed. Same reason we wanted Gaddafi removed. To get rid of these people, to put in pro-Western stooge governments, to let them run their countries to serve U.S. interests, corporate interests, imperial interests, and so on.
Does the fact that they had their own banks and weren't connected to the World Bank or any of the other Western banks, was that a part of why we wanted to get rid of those governments?
Oh, absolutely. One of the big crimes a country can commit against America is to trade outside of the dollar. Saddam was trading outside of the dollar in Iraqi currency. Same thing with Gaddafi in Libya. And this is a major no-no. The dollar, as the world's reserve currency, which it is now, is extremely important for America. It funds America's wars. It buys America's bonds. It keeps America's corporations strong. It does all of these things. And if the dollar loses its reserve currency status, then all of these benefits are lost. So if a country dares to trade in its own currency outside of the dollar, it gets targeted for regime change. That one offense alone gets it targeted for regime change.
Now, the situation with the group ISIS seemed to come out of nowhere. Could you help us make some sense of what's going on there in Syria? You know, we have the rebels, then we have ISIS, and everybody seems to be fighting everybody. Maybe you could tell us who's supporting them and what that's all about.
Well, the most important thing to say about ISIS, Cheryl, is number one, it's a U.S. invention. America invented ISIS the same way as it invented the Mujahideen in the 1980s to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. And the Mujahideen then, whom Ronald Reagan called during a visit of their leaders to the Oval Office, the modern equivalent of our founding fathers, well, the equivalent of the Mujahideen today in Afghanistan is the Taliban. Same thing. So we see these things repeat. America created the Mujahideen, recruited them. America created Al-Qaeda. America created ISIS or the Islamic State. There are many, many, you could call them terrorist organizations. I think that's an accurate way of describing them. There are many of them, small ones with names I don't even recognize, others with names I do recognize, like Al-Nusra. They're all over the region. I think new ones crop up all the time. Some of them are U.S. created. Others may just crop up on their own. But America very definitely is allied with them. The war on terror is part of using these groups to initiate America's agenda, which, of course, is regime change against independent governments, and to further what I call America's imperium, advancing America's goal toward unchallenged global dominance. And this is what America seeks. And it does it by getting these groups to attack foreign countries, the governments of which America wants eliminated, to establish its own control over these countries and regional dominance en route to global dominance. That's what the America agenda is.
In your article, 9/11, the Mother of All Big Lies, you state that America is on a fast-tracked tyranny, perhaps just another false flag away. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I believe it really is, and there are some people I respect very much that say America already has reached full-blown tyranny. One of the most obvious things are the domestic laws that passed in the wake of 9/11, and I wrote about them at the time. One of my early articles, Cheryl, I called Police State America, and I put a subtitle, I Look Back and Ahead. But the Patriot Act, 4 weeks after 9/11, the Patriot Act literally eviscerated three or four of the Bill of Rights. The war on terrorism, a phony war. The war on terrorism is a war of state terrorism against the American people. That's what it really is. And nobody threatens America. There is no nation, there is no group that threatens America. And when Obama makes a statement that ISIL or Al-Qaeda or any other so-called terrorist group threatens America, people should be worried. Well, he's lying. There is no threat whatsoever.
And that was the first part of an interview with author Stephen Lendman. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion of that interview. You can read his articles on the website globalresearch.ca, and also he writes for moneynewsnow.com and for veteranstoday.com. He has a new book out called Flashpoint in Ukraine, which we'll discuss in more detail on next week's show. He also has a blog at www.sjlendman@blogspot.com. And Lendman is L-E-N-D-M-A-N. He also mentioned the fact that we were lied to about the Oklahoma City bombings. A few years back, we showed the movie A Noble Lie about the questions concerning the Oklahoma City bombing. But if you missed that, you can get the film online at www.anoblelie.com. Also, the website whatreallyhappened.org has some good information about the Oklahoma City bombing. And again, the website globalresearch.ca also has articles there posted about the Oklahoma City bombing. I also want to let you know about a new book by retired Canadian professor Graham McQueen. It's called The 2001 Anthrax Deception, The Case for a Domestic Conspiracy. And you can get it at Clarity Press. I just started reading it, and I highly recommend it. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.